I'm Julia.
And I'm Henning.
And we're from Round Top. And you're listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM in Acra, Hudson, and Catskill.
You can find out about so many local events, like the traditional Irish music session. Every Sunday, there's an open Irish music jam at the Shamrock House in East Durham from 2 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org and add your own event to the WGXC community calendar and have it read on the radio at 90.7 FM by going to wgxc.org and clicking on the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the community theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Rita Chuck Petroskis in St. Paul, Minnesota. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. The National Weather Service in Albany reports that Albany had its warmest year on record in 2023 and the ninth wettest year. The average temperature in Albany for 2023 through December 26 was 52.2 degrees Fahrenheit. The previous warmest year in Albany was 2012, with an average temperature of 51.6 degrees. Albany had 47.95 inches of precipitation in 2023, well above the 40.68 inch average. The National Weather Service temperature records date back to 1874, and precipitation records date back to 1826. See more information at the National Weather Service website. Outgoing Ulster County District Attorney David Clegg writes against column in the Daily Freeman where he says, and I quote, "Here in Ulster County, the crime rate has gone down," end quote. He reports statistics from the Division of Justice Services that show the overall crime rate in Ulster County has gone down each year from 2019 to 2022. Both violent crime and property crime rates fell during that period in Ulster County. Clegg, who did not run for re-election, writes, and I quote, "Statistics from the Gun Involvement Violence Elimination Initiative, which our office does in partnership with the Kingston Police Department, shows that after a spike in shootings during the pandemic, total incidents in 2022 and 2023 are sharply lower than in 2019. At this point in 2023, the total number of shooting incidents is less than 50% of what it was in 2019. End quote. His outgoing message also bragged about modernization in his office and that, and I quote, "our case management has been totally digitized," end quote. Read the entire guest column in the Daily Freeman. Tristan Gearing reports in the Times Union that The Local, a live music venue in Saugerties that opened in September, announced its second season with Palestinian musician Faraz Reich, Irish bluegrass band Jig Jam, and a partnership with the Brooklyn Global Music Club Barbies. So far, the new venue has showcased West African funk, Spanish flamenco, and experimental electronics. In 2024, The Local hosts Veracruzian Ensemble Cana Dulce y Cana Brava, Parisian classical musician Kahan Kalhor, and psychedelic fusion music by Combo de Guerre. Isabel Sofer and Danny Melnick are owners, and Melnick said, and I quote, "there are so many fantastic spaces indoors and outdoors around this region, but they have a lane. We're a rock club, we're a jazz club, we're a classical space, we're everything. It's total experiment." And you can read more about this story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at wgxc.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button. You'll become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a safe and happy holiday weekend, and I will see you next year.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We can inflame an already volatile situation on our campus, or we can focus our attention where it belongs, on the unfolding tragedy thousands of miles away.
Harvard President Claudine Gay responding to the Israel-Hamas war last October. She's now resigned. Gay, along with the presidents of the University of Pennsylvania and MIT, came under fire for giving unclear answers on campus anti-Semitism policies to Congress. UPenn's president resigned, but Gay hung on until separately accused of repeated plagiarism during her career. Staffing election offices is becoming a bigger issue as a huge year for politics starts. More than 160 local election supervisors in western states have left their jobs since November 2020. Paul Mason with Portland State University recently testified to the Oregon legislature about a survey of election officials in that state. He says they found flashing warning signs with personal attacks so intense many wouldn't even talk about them.
It's clearly institutional knowledge that's going to be walking out the door, and it's going to be another contentious presidential election cycle where we're going to need to be super sharp and transparent about this work for keeping public trust.
As the third anniversary of the January 6th insurrection approaches, polls show Republicans growing more sympathetic to the members of the violent mob. Georgia GOP Congressman Andrew Clyde compares the rioters who broke into the Capitol to visiting tourists.
You know, if you didn't know the TV footage was a video from January the 6th, you would actually think it was a normal tourist visit.
With more federal budget deadlines just weeks away, poverty groups worry about the impact on assistance programs like SNAP. Tommy Harner with the West Ohio Food Bank says coming on top of higher food prices, disruptions to the safety net could mean rising demand in the state throughout the coming year.
If those programs aren't fully funded as they need to be, we can potentially see an even greater increase. It can really deplete our budgets as well because we'll have to start purchasing more food just to make sure that we can keep up with that demand.
During a New Hampshire town hall, presidential candidate Nikki Haley said she'd pardon former President Donald Trump if elected. She argued it could reduce political divisions.
What's in the best interest of the country is not to have an 80-year-old man sitting in jail that continues to divide our country. What's in the best interest of the country would be to pardon him so that we can move on as a country and no longer talk about him.
The former Trump UN ambassador and her other Republican rivals have struggled to run against the overwhelming frontrunner without alienating his followers. Haley's taking the position that Trump was the right man in 2016, but the controversy surrounding him now don't suit a commander-in-chief. New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez is facing additional charges of corruption. Accused of receiving bribes and gold bars to help the government of Egypt, Menendez is now being indicted for giving aid to Qatar. His attorney denied that there is any proof to the new or old charges. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A Georgia racial gerrymandering case was finalized December 28th, approving a new map which included another majority-minority congressional district. The map puts Georgia in compliance with the Voting Rights Act Section 2, but the Georgia legislature further gerrymandered other districts, including the district of a current black congresswoman. In early December, a federal district court ruled that Georgia must draw a second congressional district where black Georgians could elect the candidate of their choice, as outlined in the Voting Rights Act Section 2 and affirmed by the U.S. Supreme Court's Milligan decision. After the new map was submitted December 8th, democracy advocates complained that while it added the second majority-minority district, the legislature further gerrymandered other districts, including cracking the district of black Congresswoman Lucy McBath, elected by a coalition of black, Latino, and other minorities. December 28th, Judge Steve Jones ruled that while the Georgia legislature's map did meet his order, the 2019 U.S. Supreme Court Rucho case didn't allow him to rule on any partisan gerrymandering. He also noted that the case was brought to protect black voters, not a coalition of minority voters. A decision in a U.S. Supreme Court case from South Carolina later this year may determine whether legislatures can gerrymander minority areas, say it's partisan gerrymandering, and get away with it. We'll have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many everyday choices, like washing your clothes in cold instead of hot water, are an opportunity to help reduce carbon pollution. A new book called The Climate Action Handbook gives people 100 ways to improve their habits at home and champion climate solutions in their communities.
The premise for the book was that every action matters because we need everyone doing what they can and what they're good at.
Author Heidi Roop says that as a climate scientist, she spent a lot of time talking about the problem, but she did not always have a good answer for people who asked her what to do about it.
And so the Climate Action Handbook is an attempt to try to answer that question, to invite as many people in as possible to see themselves as part of the solution.
The guide provides lots of ideas, like eating more plant-based meals, choosing slower shipping for deliveries, voting in every election, and supporting youth climate activists. The ideas are accompanied by striking illustrations that help readers understand what they can do and why it makes a difference.
Coming up with the list was really my own learning process to say what are the ways, big and small, that all matter, that we can show up and make climate a part of the decision that we make every day.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day local AFL and CIO unions in Stamford, Connecticut, joined forces to bring out 20,000 members from 30 trade unions in a massive one-day general strike to support striking machinists at Yale and Town Lock. The machinists had been out on strike since November, demanding a 30% wage increase and a union shop. The combined Stamford labor organizations had promised action if Governor Raymond Baldwin did not withdraw state police from interfering with peaceful picketing. The state police were being used to attack the picket lines, arrest strikers, and escort scabs into the plant. In a last-minute attempt to avert the general strike, Yale and Town President W. Gibson Carey Jr. offered an 18% raise, but refused any talk of a closed shop. So the unions went on an extended lunch hour, effectively bringing the entire city to a standstill. Numerous small businesses closed their shops and joined in support. Marchers converged upon Town Hall from five directions. Their placards read, "Stamford is a union town. Let's keep it. And we will not yield victory." Workers represented unions like the Mine Mill, the American Federation of Musicians, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the Barbers Union, Bookbinders, Gas and Chemical, and United Steelworkers, among many others. World War II veterans carried a banner that read, "We licked the Axis, and we can beat Kerry." Despite public support, pitched battles continued on the picket lines. The company would not budge until April, when they finally accepted the proposal the machinists had demanded back in January. The machinists quickly ratified the contract. They beat back a union-busting offensive and built local solidarity among unions at a time when the AFL and CIO were very much at odds.
Signal Hill, Newfoundland, Thursday morning, December the 12th, 1901.
Sono lieto di poter rievocare, in poche parole, le esperienze delle prime trasmissioni radiotelegrafiche a grandi distanze da me felicemente eseguite attraverso l'Oceano Atlantico il 12 dicembre 1901. Queste esperienze provarono conclusivamente che la trasmissione e la ricezione delle onde elettriche non erano affatto limitate, come a quel tempo credevano tutti gli scienziati alle brevi distanze, bensì potevano essere utilizzate per le comunicazioni fra il vecchio e il nuovo mondo.
The sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees. Yo-ho, it's hot, the sun is not a place where we could live, but here on Earth there'd be no life without the light it gives. We need its light, we need its heat, we need its energy. Without the sun, without a doubt, there'd be the sun is a mass of incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a
have found that the sun is a huge atom-crushing machine. The heat and light from the sun are caused by the nuclear reaction between hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, and helium.
The sun is a massive incandescent gas, a gigantic nuclear furnace, where hydrogen is built into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
Here's local 2022 music from Columbia County's Splink Moss Explosion. The song's called Honey Bee Bop.
Baby, 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 sugar, 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 oh, darling, darling, darling. Honey.
is on my mind. Honey bee bop,
I like that style.
Honey bee bop,
that sweet, sweet smile.
Honey bee bop,
look in the eye.
Honey bee bop,
rock and roll style.
Honey bee bop, the sweetest every time. Is on my mind. Honey bee bop,
sweet, sweet smile.
Honey bee bop,
look in the eye.
Honey bee bop,
rock and roll style.
Honey bee bop,
oh yeah.
Honey bee bop, the sweetest every time. Baby, baby, baby. Sugar, sugar, sugar. Oh, darling.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're talking with Trudy Quaife, who is on Bethlehem's Neighbors for Peace. She was on recently talking with respect to the December 5th presentation that Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace put together at the local library with Miko Piled, who is a Israeli-Palestinian activist, and that caused quite a bit of controversy in the local community. And actually, the Bethlehem Library Board has now decided that they're going to ban Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace from using the library for a year, allegedly underground, because Miko, after the event, apparently sold a book or two out in his car, which they claim violates the rules. So Trudy, why don't you quickly bring us up to speed? What is the present controversy, and why did Miko's presentation generate such a backlash?
Well, it's hard to know why this particular event created such a backlash. I think it's at least partially due to the fact that Israel is at war with Gaza right now. People are very sensitive about that issue. But that's also the reason that we asked him to come. A lot of our members are really concerned about the war, and they would like it to stop. And Miko Piled has a perspective that you don't get in the mainstream media. And he's a great speaker. He's very well informed. He was born in Israel. He was in the military in Israel himself. His father was a general. His grandfather was one of the original signers of not the Declaration of Independence, but whatever the original document was in Israel. His grandfather was one of the signers. So he's a really interesting person to have come and talk. And we'd had him before. We had him back in 2018. Another group had also had him. In fact, the other group had him at the Bethlehem Library, and he actually just written a book at that point, and he was selling books, and he was well received both times. Neither time did we have any protesters. So
maybe we just go back and get a little bit of the history for Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace. You know, I know them as a well-respected longtime peace group here in the Capital District, known for doing, I guess, a weekly visual out at, I believe, the Four Corners area in Bethlehem, I believe, Monday evening. But how long has Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace been active? Obviously, been active on peace issues, but, you know, what are some of the issues that you've focused on over the years?
Well, we've primarily focused on peace. We formed as a group and became Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace in 2003. So we've been around over 20 years. We started with the vigil. In 2004, we decided to go ahead and have a program at the library, We started thinking about how people didn't really have access to a lot of good information by reading the newspaper. And we thought,
2004 is probably the wars in Iran, Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yes. That was really what brought us all together as a group. And there were quite a few people in Bethlehem at that time that were really upset about those wars. So it wasn't hard to get 30 people together to protest at the Four Corners, even when they first started. And I wasn't there at the very beginning, but I saw them out there. I heard them speak. I thought, I want to be part of this group. I was so impressed that they were willing to stand there. So that's when I joined, just about 20 years ago. And I've been working with them ever since. We've had a program at the library almost once a month for that 20 years. We stopped during COVID, but pretty much we've continued that. We've covered all sorts of issues: climate change, Black Lives Matter, hydrofracking, healthcare for all. We've had many authors. We've showed various films. Julian Assange, you name it, we've probably had a forum about it. If it wasn't at the Bethlehem Library, we had forums also at the Albany Library or the Bethlehem Town Hall. So we've always thought it was really important to be out there in the community offering some kind of educational program.
And my guess is that you're actually Bethlehem Neighbors of Peace, probably one of the more active and even larger community groups in the town?
Well, I'd say, I don't know if we're more active, but we certainly had a pretty sizable membership, especially in the beginning. And I think at the height of our group, we might have had a mailing list of maybe 700 people. We're down to about 350 now. But to show up now for a vigil, we can have anywhere between 5 and 20. And if we ask people to come out for a particular reason, we'll get more.
Now we got a little bit under about 4 minutes left. So, you know, just reading from the paper, you know, they accused Miko Pellet, you know, of engaging in hate speech. A lot of that seemed to be, you know, around this common chant you see at all of the Palestinian support rallies, you know, right, from the river, you know, to the sea, which is, you know, a sort of description of the, you know, I guess, Palestinian homeland. I mean, how would you describe, you know, Miko's, you know, presentation? Did you see any level of hate or anti-Semitism?
No, I didn't see any at all. I really respect what he says. I think he's very truthful and honest. I think he can back up what he says with facts. I think what was unusual about this is that this group of people had tried to stop the event. The town board had a meeting to try to give the community an opportunity to voice why they didn't want the event to happen.
You mean the library board?
The town library board, yes. They had a meeting on the 4th, December 4th. They gave people an opportunity to speak. Almost 100 people spoke, mostly against Miko Pellet being allowed to speak. But To their credit, the library board decided to let him go ahead, recognizing our First Amendment right. However, some of those people were really not happy. So on the 5th, some of those same people showed up, and there'd been a lot of publicity over the December 4th meeting. So almost 200 people showed up. We only had room for about 95. So many of those people managed to get into the program, and right from the beginning, they tried to shut it down. So there were a few things that Miko said that really upset them. He did use the term "from the river to the sea." At that point, the library director came in and tried to stop the program. Quite a few people were really upset by that. There were, I would say, probably 75% of the people that were there really wanted to hear what he had to say. They were really interested in what he was talking about. But there were just a very few people, maybe 5 people, that decided that they weren't going to let it happen. So they started screaming hate speech and anti-Semitism and various different things to try to stop the program. At one point, one of the library board members came in and said, there is no legal definition of hate speech. Please let this program continue. And eventually it did continue and it ended, but it had been very contentious the entire time. The agitators, I would call them, were trying to stop the program the whole time. They were
Well, we only have about 90 seconds left. So they have banned Bethlehem Neighbors for Peace for, you know, a year holding events. Yes. Understand some people are going to show up at the, I guess, January 8th board meeting and try to tell them this is really, you know, restriction on free speech. And the last minute or so, if people want to express their opinion at this point, you know, how can they do so? And there's any sense that the library board might be backing down?
There's no sense that the library board might be backing down. There is a Bethlehem Public Library website. You can add your comments on the website. There's a form where you can address the board. The board meets, I think, the first Monday of every month. They're meeting on January 8th. They do allow people to make a 3-minute statement at that meeting. So some of us will definitely be there for that.
Bethlehem Neighbors of Peace have a website if people want more information about the group?
We do. BethlehemNeighborsForPeace.org is our website. We also have an email that goes out weekly. You can get on our email list. We have a Facebook page. We'd love to have more people join us. We're out there every Monday vigiling, 4 o'clock in the wintertime, 5 o'clock in the summer.
Talking with Trudy Quay from Bethlehem's Neighbors for Peace, and this has been Mark Dunley with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. We're talking with Anne Rabe, who's the Environmental Policy Director for NYPIRG, the New York Public Interest Research Group. And on December 28th, they and a number of local elected officials, and I believe some young people, held a news conference to highlight the need for Governor Hochul to include what's the known as the Climate Superfund Act in the state budget. So, Anne, why don't you just give us a quick introduction? What is the Climate Superfund Act and why is it important?
Well, it's a bill that would establish, just like we have for toxic waste dumps, a superfund to clean up toxic waste dumps with industry fees. It would establish a superfund for climate damage repair costs and resiliency and community protection projects related to the climate emergency that we're all in. And it would be funded by big oil companies, the big climate crisis contributors, raising $3 billion a year.
And I believe one of the things is because you're going after the biggest climate producers or contributors, you know, many of them are multi-state. And so therefore, it would be harder for them to pass the cost on in New York since they sell products in many states.
Correct. But it's also a market force. So, you know, the mom and pop gas stations in New York, they go for the lowest bidder. So Sunoco isn't on the list to pay their portion share of the $3 billion, but ExxonMobil is. Well, ExxonMobil is not going to increase their prices because they're going to lose out to the Sunocos that aren't paying. So it's a market force driven way to not have consumer prices increase because they're paying for their past contributions, their past actions that created the climate crisis and the damages today.
Now, one other thing that NYPIRG did at this December 28th news conference, you released an analysis showing that New York State taxpayers were heavily burdened by over $2 billion in climate costs, basically from December 2022 to December 2023, or $272 per household. What are you actually measuring in that analysis?
Yeah, we measure a very narrow database, but it's the only one that's publicly available. So it's an underestimate for sure. $2.1 billion, we call it the taxpayer tally. What I did is I went and looked at a year's worth of Governor Hochul's news releases where she either pledged or announced that X million dollars was spent to repair X bridge that, you know, was damaged during an extreme storm, for instance.
And I also understand you had a number of local officials and a number of them wrote a letter to the Governor Hochul. Why the local officials join in this effort?
The local officials in this organization, the Elected Officials to Protect America, the New York State chapter, 100 of them signed on to a letter to the governor saying that basically they are on the front lines of the climate crisis, their communities, bearing the full weight of its impacts, especially in relation to budget. So they're basically their reserve funds, according to the mayor of Hudson, according to Albany County legislators. They're basically on the front lines, and they're having to go to their reserve funds to pay for the repair of climate damages.
Now, of course, in the Hudson Valley this summer, as in Vermont and even in New York City, there were some, you know, once in a thousand year, you know, flooding. So that obviously, you know, is one of the things that contributes to increased costs, I imagine, for some of these municipalities.
Yes, big time. I should mention that Albany Mayor Kathy Sheehan, Albany County President Corey Ellis, and the New York City Comptroller Brad Lander are all co-signers of that letter. So more and more local government officials are aware that because Governor Hochul has not established any revenue stream for climate costs, it's all on the taxpayers, on the county and city taxpayers, and on the state taxpayers to pay for billions, really, of dollars in relation to climate damages, climate resilience and community protection, extreme heat programs, that sort of thing. So they're coming out more and more. And Dominic Frangello, who's the co-founder of Elected Officials to Protect America, came out of the fracking, anti-fracking movement. He spoke and basically said, you know, we need big oil to pay now. We need the Climate Superfund to take this burden off the taxpayers.
Now, perhaps a clarification I would throw out there. I know that actually, you know, customers do pay a surcharge on their utility bills. Think about $600 million a year to subsidize renewable energy projects in the state. And they also pay perhaps even a larger amount to subsidize nuclear power plants. That's something Governor Cuomo pushed through, $7.6 billion over, I think, 12 years or so. So this is different than funding, say, renewable energy or nuclear power.
Exactly. But those are very good points to raise. I mean, basically, the governor has done a disservice to all of us by not having an annual budget to implement the Climate Act, the law that passed in 2019. So we don't have a good sense of how much climate costs we're spending on all fronts. And actually, she just vetoed last month a bill passed both houses to require annual climate expenditure, publicly released annual climate expenditure budget.
Really? So,
yes, she vetoed that. Very reasonable bill.
Yeah, I was just actually lobbying the New York State's controller to actually put, you know, ask what they're supposed to do is audit. And I said, you know, I actually was working for Nightbird for the summer, and I tried to get, you know, some detailed information as to how much the money the New York State was actually spending on renewable energy. And no one knew. The governor did not know, Power Authority, NYSERDA. People knew it was in their budget, and a lot of their numbers were, you know, cooked a little bit. Because they said, well, we gave out $500 million to renewable energy projects. Well, that's nice, but those renewable energy projects not coming online for 12 years or 10 years. How much are you actually spending? So she vetoed that. What was the rationale for trying to keep hidden? Because she puts out these press releases with these enormous tens of billions of dollars mm-hmm. spending. It's clearly not taxpayer or even public money she's talking about.
I knew
she was going to veto that thing.
Yeah, well, I have not obtained the veto message yet. I'm also in a quandary, as are many other organizations. I mean, why would you not want the public and government agencies and the legislature to know what our annual climate expenditures are? How can we get a handle on how to implement the Climate Act if we don't know how much we're spending now and how much we need to spend in the future?
Well, maybe she'd be worried that the numbers she put out were quite a bit less than what she's putting out in her press releases. So we only got about 2 minutes left. Now, I understand this Climate Superfund Act actually passed the state Senate last year. I believe Senator Krueger is the champion over there. How are things looking both for the governor getting it in the budget and, you know, is the assembly going to come on board this year?
Well, we hope that both will be occurring. We had a great meeting 3 weeks ago with the governor's top officials. We, as in 27 organizations, and we had a really robust conversation. They had questions about implementation. We feel like we've satisfied those questions. I mean, this is based on a 43-year-old successful program, a polluter pay legal principle to clean up, again, toxic waste dumps. Now we're cleaning up climate crisis damages. So implementation is not a question. It's easily implemented by the Department of Environmental Conservation with the assistance of the Comptroller's Office. So we're hopeful the governor is going to include it in her budget and State of the State. And we have over 50 assembly co-sponsors. We've had great meetings with a lot of committee chairs and with the Speaker's Office. So we're hopeful, but obviously people power is what's going to pass this bill into law. And so we urge people to email the governor, go to her website, email the governor to include Climate Change Superfund Act, Senate 2129A in her budget.
And just to disclose, Hudson Mohawk Magazine did not take any position one way or other on legislation. Is $3 billion enough? I believe that's the target to raise. Is that enough to deal with the extent of the problem?
No, it's a first step. $3 billion out of the estimated $10-plus billion needed annually. First step.
Well, and if people want to see your quest analysis, is on your website, NYPIRG.org?
That's right. Scroll down to the bottom under news, and you'll see the taxpayer tally, links to all the governor's news releases, and more information about this important climate budget bill.
Thank you very much. Ann Rabe, New York Public Interest Research Group, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
Next, we hear the Flower Shop Blues Boogie from Columbia County's Slink Moss Explosion from their 2022 album Floating Ghost Hotel.
When she told me, do you want to see no more? I'm feeling low, I'm feeling blue. I got the lowdown blue. Standing on the corner, flowers in my hand. Wasn't part of my original plan. I'm feeling low. I got the lowdown. Down to the river, drop the flowers in the river. Watch the flowers flowing away. Floating away, floating away.
That was 2022 new music from Lucretia Dalt. The song was called Mariterna, and it's from the Baby soundtrack. That's a HBO Max TV show with Lucretia Dalt there with the music on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
From the WGXing newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Andre Amigo reports for Porcupine Soup that it finally might snow this weekend. The first major snowstorm of the year may come Saturday and Sunday. The National Weather Service in Albany said, and I quote, "We are monitoring the potential for accumulating snow associated with a coastal storm expected to develop over the weekend. While it is early for specifics, a plowable snowfall, greater than 3 inches, is possible, especially from Albany South, Saturday into Sunday. We have further updates to refine the forecast as the weekend draws closer," end quote. It should be another day or two before the forecast becomes more clear. WNYT meteorologist Paul Ciano said, and I quote, "If the storm track is close enough to the coast, more snow is likely across our region. A track farther off the coast of Long Island would mean less snow or even no snow for the North Country," end quote. Read more about this story at Porcupine Sioux. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that protesters supporting a ceasefire in the Palestine-Israel conflict disrupted a swearing-in ceremony of elected town officials that was officiated by Representative Pat Ryan on January 2nd in Ulster County. A statement from the protesters demanded Ryan, and I quote, "immediately and unconditionally support a permanent ceasefire and end military aid to Israel," end quote. About a dozen protesters interrupted the event, holding a banner reading "Permanent Ceasefire" and chanting, and I quote, "Ryan, Ryan, you can't hide. We charge you with genocide," end quote. And I quote, "not another nickel, not another dime, no more money for Israel's crimes," end quote. And I quote, "no justice, no votes," end quote. Audience members there for the swearing-in ceremony yelled back at the protesters to sit down and shut up. Gardner resident Linda Geary said the protest was, and I quote, "embarrassing and rude, and I think they didn't make any points to Pat Ryan that he hasn't already heard," end quote. Many local citizens have been exercising their right to protest Ryan recently, with several rallies outside his offices. Ryan did not release a statement after the protests, but has repeatedly come out against a ceasefire in the Middle East conflict. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Kate Lisa reports for New York State of Politics that state legislators returned to Albany on January 6th to start the latest legislative session. Lisa reports there are five major issues. Legislators will wrestle with a projected $4.3 million budget deficit this year, an affordable housing crisis, and busloads of migrants constantly arriving in the state, redistricting, and the relationship between Governor Kathy Hochul and the legislators. Hochul recently vetoed a slew of bills the legislators passed and said, and I quote, "we can get to fewer vetoes, but let's have more common sense involved in the process of developing the legislation," end quote. Assembly Speaker Carl Hestey said, and I quote, "I don't agree with her assessment, but I also say this. Then I hope that means we won't see any policy in the budget, because the policy she put forth in her budget, there was no hearing when she proposed it to us," end quote. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.